Hello, and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Chad Markwitz, and I'm speaking today with Mike Rowley, President and CEO of Stillwater Critical Minerals, traded on the TSXV under the ticker PGE, and on the OTCQB under the ticker PGEZF. Mike, it's always great having you on the show to discuss what work Stillwater Critical Minerals is doing, and we've got a big announcement today for folks, and a lot of you have been writing us about this and sending us emails, and that's about the resource upgrade that you just put out. And this is big news, Mike, because we knew it was going to grow, but it shows a 62% increase to 1.6 billion pounds of battery metal. So that would be your nickel, copper, and cobalt, and 3.8 million ounces of PGEs and gold. That's including platinum, palladium, rhodium, and gold. This is a big deal for the company as far as to see an increase this big. And I won't steal your thunder, but break down some of the key metrics in here that you want investors to take away from this resource expansion.
Oh, sure. And glad to be back, too. Thank you. It's fantastic. It speaks to the size of the system that we're in and how much metal is there in the magma of the Stillwater complex. That should perhaps be obvious from the size and grade of our neighbor's operations, Sibanye. But it's translating for us into really low discovery costs and great leaps in terms of contained metal, the 62% number. That's remarkable for a relatively small drill campaign, right? And then the grade component. Not only have we crossed the billion pounds of contained nickel, which is a nice threshold, but we've increased that high grade component very nicely now. And that's something that you'll see us chase out. We continue to work a variety of mine models here. This is an inferred resource. We've got a lot of optionality on how this plays out. And it's still five deposits across that core 9 kilometers that look like they want to connect. So you can infer from that that there's lots of room to grow on this.
Well, Mike, to that point, you've got these five deposit areas. I know you've done more work on three of them that we've talked about quite often in the past. But where do you see your discovery cost coming in on this, and how can you continue to grow it? And I guess how does that stack up to other projects of the same tenor?
Yeah, discovery costs are very low. We're under 2 cents a pound nickel equivalent, under $2 per ounce palladium equivalent, which is, we're just amassing now how that compares in the industry, but it's very, very low. And that reflects, again, the grade of the district and the amount of metal that's there. This is also near surface, too. A lot of our mineralization starts at surface. A lot of our holes only have to go 200 or 300 meters deep. And then just connect the dots again along that 9 kilometer core area, even the 12 kilometers that we've defined to 800 meter depth with that IP survey. I mean, that plus these experts we brought in from Ivanhoe, Danny Grobler, Albert Britz, that's lighting the way for us very nicely as we look to expand this. You asked about peers. In the US, I think at this point, we don't really have peers when you consider active mining districts. The U.S. has one producing nickel mine, the Eagle Mine run by Lundin. It's a nice operation, but it's running out of ore, and it's small. It's closing, I think, in 2026, and it's produced 317 million pounds of nickel to date. We just debuted three times, or we just updated to three times that amount. By the time it's run its course in a couple of years, it'll have produced, they estimate, 440 million pounds nickel. There's another mine coming online, but it's overall a very similar size with just under 500 million pounds total nickel in all categories. That's the Tamarack project by Talon. And Tesla, of course, has famously bought all the supply from that mine. On an annual basis, that's 165 million pounds per annum. So once again, we've got a healthy multiple on that supply, and it makes a really good addition at a time when the U.S. needs these critical metals.
Well, Mike, it sounds like you only have one or two peers there, and you already have a larger deposit on the nickel side. What about on the PGM side? When you look at platinum, palladium, and rhodium, I know Sibanye, Stillwater is your neighbors. They're a massive company. They're a major, and they are probably the highest grade PGM mine in the world. But are there any other platinum, palladium projects in the U.S. or North America that you think are comparable in size at this point?
No, the Stillwater complex is it for significant PGEs in the U.S., and Sibanye is the only U.S. producer, highest grade in the world, beautiful half ounce per ton grade. That, again, speaks to the amount of metal that was in the magma that put down this entire district that we share with them. Their market cap's about $8 billion these days. They run those three mines and smelter. It's a really good place for us to be. There is some PGE production out of Canada. I believe it's typically smaller. There's a dedicated PGE mine. And then there's co-product recoveries out of Sudbury, I think, as well. But the North American scene is dominated by the Stillwater complex. And in fact, the Western Hemisphere, as you look at these layered magmatic systems, Stillwater really is it in terms of size and metal endowment. We're looking to South Africa for those parallels. Again, that Platte Reef comparison. Platte Reef District, of course, part of the Bushveld, 400 million ounces in total, tens of billions of pounds of nickel and copper in sulfide. And that's Anglo-American's Mogalakwena mine, biggest platinum mine in the world, and then Ivanhoe's Platte Reef mine. And we, of course, have their chief geologist now since last May as our vice president of exploration. And that speaks a lot to our Platte Reef in Montana model and where we see this developing over 2023.
Well, let's dive into that concept just a little bit more. I know that's why you brought on Danny Grobler and Albie Britz, because they have that experience in the Bushveld and they understand these Platte Reef style deposits. It's a little different than your neighbor at Sibanye, but we've had a lot of people ask us, Mike, or speculate, I should say, you know, are they the only natural suitor for you, Sibanye Stillwater, or do you think there's other majors that could operate in a Platte Reef style operation that would still be interested in your deposit and maybe even look at building, milling, and that kind of thing on your properties standalone? I guess the question is Sibanye Stillwater the only suitor, or could somebody else be in the mix as well?
No, far from it. Any of the base metal giants would be relevant here, and even some of the precious metal giants. We've talked to the great majority of them. Some of them are under NDA. As I think I've related in the past, we've had offers on the project, but they've been structures that don't work for us. They basically cap the upside for us and our investors, right? They're sort of project deal structures, not appropriate at an early stage. We've added greater value just by doing private placements and growing this by the drill bit ourselves. That might change this year, given the conversations that are underway. But, you know, if we don't see a deal we like, we're quite happy to keep working it ourselves until we do.
Well, Mike, two other minerals that show up in this report beyond the ones we normally talk about. We've talked a lot in the past in previous interviews, and I encourage people to go back and listen to those or even some of the company presentations your team puts out, Mike, because we've talked a lot about nickel, copper, and cobalt. We've talked a lot about palladium, platinum, gold, and even last time we mentioned the big increase in rhodium, which you can see a 76% increase here just on this news you just put out on the resource. But there's two other ones that show up on here I'd like to discuss. One of them is chromium. So chrome, you've got 2.27 billion pounds of chromium inventoried. I guess break that down, but it's at least in your deposit here. And the other thing that strikes my attention is you've got some sulfur grades in here, 1.13% to 6.16%. Why are you reporting the chromium and the sulfur, and what should investors take away from that?
The chromium represents a value that we're looking to bring on the table longer term. It has different metallurgy, so we're not assuming it yet, but that's a pretty good endowment of additional value. So we are inventorying it, and as we get into metallurgical work here this year and next year, we'll begin to look to bring that on the table. The Stillwater District, of course, produced chrome for the Allies. It was the main source, certainly for the U.S., during the 40s and 50s, actually. It's still known for the highest grade chrome reserves in the U.S. So that was an earlier wave of the Stillwater District producing critical minerals. The sulfur is not so much an economic interest, but it's something that your viewers should be following. It's relevant in the metallurgy discussion because these magmatic systems, these nickel deposits, nickel PGE, of course, they're all magmatic in origin. You have to look to the recoverability of the nickel. That's always a question. How much of the nickel is in sulfide and how much of it is in silicate? The silicate stuff is very difficult to recover. And that's why you look at lower recoveries, even 10 and 40% on some of our peer companies, for example, because that nickel is in silicate. To track sulfur is an easy way to assess the likely recoverability of that nickel. So we're seeing robust sulfur values, and we feel like reporting them because, frankly, if you run the kind of back-of-the-envelope calculations that the majors are teaching us, you'll find that we pass the test quite nicely. And that's consistent with the pentlandite mineralization that we see and the nice large-grained nickel sulfide pentlandite. that we have, and indeed with AMAX's historic tests done in the 70s in the Iron Mountain target area, where they saw good recoveries in a simple flotation system back in the day. That's a long answer, but essentially it's all pointing to very positive recoveries and mineability in a possible scenario.
Well, I appreciate breaking that down for us, Mike. It makes a little more sense why you're reporting the sulfur there. And yeah, the chromium will be interesting to follow along with as well. And we see that a lot in the South African complex as well, where chromium appears along with PGMs. And so that could be another value driver for the stock. Speaking about the value of the stock, I'm going to ask you kind of a tough question, Mike. And that is, when I look at your market cap in the mid 40 millions, you know, 43 million as of today, and I look at all these companies that we sometimes talk to that are drill plays for gold or silver or maybe for copper that don't have any ounces in the ground. They don't have any defined resources, and they're trading at multiples of where you guys are. And you now have this huge resource that you've just put in place with 1.6 billion pounds of battery metals, 3.8 million ounces of PGEs and gold. Why do you think the market does not understand the value you have in the ground already? I mean, it just boggles my mind. I'm a current shareholder, so I'm biased, Mike, but I'm still just perplexed by why your market cap isn't tenfold what it is now based on the resources you have. Is there something you think the market doesn't understand about this resource yet?
Well, polymetallic projects are always more difficult to relate. And, you know, we are both battery metals and PGEs, which are often two different things, precious metal, base metal. Yeah, that's something we're watching as well. Frankly, we're in line with a great many of our peers, and our share price last year followed the broader trends in the market, the flight to the U.S. dollar, and then to some degree tax loss selling late in the year, right? But that created a great buying opportunity. You're correct. We're sitting with 40 million market cap with 20 billion U.S. gross metal value in the ground, 27, I think, billion Canadian. That's quite a spread, and we're going to work to close that. I think it'll take also the general market sentiment improving as well. But that just shows how much value there is to be created just by catching up, in addition to the catalysts we have in the hopper and the good things we plan to do in 2023. It takes a little time for a significant addition like this to be absorbed by the market, I think, too, right? If you look at the October 2021 resource, or inaugural one, it took the markets a good few weeks to really move on that news. And we may be looking at that here now as well. So it may take us into February, perhaps even March, before we start to get to the price level that we think we should be at.
Yeah, I just have to restate that again, Mike. You're at a $43 million market cap, but you have $20 billion worth of resources in the ground. That is a huge spread. I mean, again, it just blows my mind. But I hope that this resource update gives people a bigger picture of what the company already has found. Let's talk about exploration, though. There's still a lot of upside here. It's not like this deposit's closed off in any way, so there's still a lot of room to run. What do you anticipate the drill program being for the balance of the year? Where are you going next with exploration?
We're going to do our biggest program yet this year, and we're going to continue to do 100-meter step-outs mostly, given, as you can see from some of our images, that this is the five deposits that want to connect across the 9 kilometers. That's low-hanging fruit for us. Just keep growing them together. Perhaps 20% holes more wildcat in nature. You know, step out and test some of the exciting new things the team has worked up here. We feel really good about it, frankly. I can tell you that the mood on the inside is excitement. Danny and Albie have been great additions. They get along really well with our core Montana team. Between them, over 100 years experience between these two great districts. And these guys will light the way very nicely as we grow this. And the upside potential here, in geologic terms, is almost without peer. It's really fun.
Well, just one more wild card question here, Mike. Last time we talked, we discussed the Pine target, which has a lot more gold in it, really. And it's outside of those five resource areas we've talked about before. When we'd cover that, a few people asked, well, what's this Pine target really all about? Is it just a separate deposit? Is it something else going on outside of these PGEs and base metals and battery metals? What would you say to people about the Pine target? And is that going to get any more exploration this year?
It absolutely will. We want to move that along to a resource. It is a shear structure cutting basically sort of north-south across the complex, and some later events have happened there to move minerals around and concentrate them, and we've taken an extra year basically to figure that out. We did some good work last year to pull back some talus and expose the structure. We did those samples that you saw. We think we've got a bearing now on what's happening there geologically to the point that we can start to model it. And we're going to move to advance that towards a resource here. It'd be a nice add. As a drill-defined mineralized zone, it's running, you know, in our internal working, sort of 8 grams gold. It's a nice addition with significant nickel and palladium, like the rest of the district. It's worth noting that we're seeing high gold as well, 9 kilometers away in drill core in the Iron Mountain HDR area, and also in those high nickel hits at Chrome Mountain. So there's something happening there with one particular pulse of magma or something that brought significant gold to the table in a district that's known for PGEs and nickel copper.
Okay, I appreciate you providing a little more color on that. Sounds like it's still going to get some more focus on exploration this year, as well as the 5 other target areas. Is there any other key news coming down the pike you want investors to key in on as we roll through the year? Now that the maiden resource is now that the updated resource is out, and people will have some time to digest this, what's the key news on tap you want investors to focus on?
Sure. Well, we were busy right through winter. There was no Christmas off for us. We've got a lot in the hopper. There are 2022 results coming out. You'll see us give a bit of attention to our critical mineral asset in the Yukon. We've got some plans there to move that along, still with a focus in Montana, which is where the focus should be. But there's value there that we can realize in the Yukon and initiatives to be taken advantage of. Our expanding work with the U.S. government as well will be the subject of some upcoming news releases. And I'm off to a conference in Austin, Texas on Valentine's Day for that announcement with Cornell University and our work under a DOE grant there, which I think you'll see expand as well. After that, it's going to be our 2023 plans. And I think you'll see some updated models and images based on the work that Albie and Danny have done. And then our drill plans for the year, of course, and we'll be on to bigger programs.
Okay. Well, we'll keep following along with all the news as it comes out, Mike. Always appreciate getting you on the show just to get an update. Hats off to your exploration team and operational team for a pretty solid resource update here, and looking forward to our next conversation.
Brilliant. Thanks so much.